This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. All right, so we're going to get into the Calvin Ridley NFL gambling situation. The big story of the morning. But before we do, I'm going to start this show, and you know me, I love to tell you when I'm wrong, because I'm wrong a lot. But I also like to tell you when I'm right. A couple of days ago, Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports was pointing out that the Chattanooga Mocs and the Furman Paladins were two really good basketball teams. He was trying to hype up the SoCon championship game. And I pointed out to him, I said, well, I'm rooting for Chattanooga because they have a player named David Jean-Baptiste, and I think that's a really cool name. And because he's got a really cool name, that's who I'm rooting for. And sure enough, last night, David Jean-Baptiste came through, hitting a 40-foot three-pointer at the buzzer in overtime in one of the most thrilling endings of a basketball game you'll see, sending Chattanooga to the NCAA tournament. Furman had taken a two-point lead and missed free throw. Chattanooga did not call timeout. They went down the court. David Jean-Baptiste in the corner, few feet off of the three-point line, knocked it in. If you're a basketball player growing up and you're shooting baskets in your driveway or down at the park or whatever, we do it all the time. We've all done it where you play to that last second shot. And sometimes it's win the NBA championship or the NCAA tournament or whatnot. But it's always for something. It's always for some value. Little did David Jean-Baptiste know that a miracle three-pointer, would they say it's a miracle three-pointer? He had a good look and a good shot. He didn't just huck it up there over his head. Would land Chattanooga in the NCAA tournament and kill Furman's dream. The SoCon has never sent two teams to the tournament, never. And it doesn't look like they will this year. It doesn't look like Furman at 22-12 are going to get an invite. So congratulations to the Mocs in one of the more thrilling games, a puncher ticket game. We talked about these mid-major tournaments and how exciting they can be when everything is on the line and everything can be lost. Last night was a perfect example. Only one of those teams was getting to the dance, and the team that did, in overtime, hit a miracle three, albeit a great shot, to win. Congratulations to Chattanooga. But coming up next, we're going to dive right into this NFL gambling problem that they have with Calvin Ridley, and whether they have a bigger problem than just Calvin Ridley, because this has been something a lot of executives saw coming once the NFL started making its bed with gambling sites. It's all coming up. Tony D, Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, and good morning to you on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. Love your thoughts on this story. As Calvin Ridley, Atlanta Falcons wide receiver, has now been suspended for the upcoming season after it was found out that he had gambled and made some parlay bets in November while he was away from the Falcons on personal leave. Just to sort of remind you of the story, and really, let's go back to the summer. Right. So the fifth-year option was picked up by the Atlanta Falcons on Calvin Ridley. Remember, they traded Julio Jones to the Tennessee Titans, thus making Ridley basically wide receiver one on the offense. And it was expected that, you know, with that, he was going to end up getting an extension. And he's going to make $11 million going into this season that he's now forfeited. But on Halloween, well, they were going to leave for London. And he decided, before Halloween, they were leaving for London. He just said, I can't make the trip. I got some personal issues I got to deal with. And the Falcons said, okay, that's fine. All right. So they went and played in London. They came back. And Ridley then said, look, I need some time away. I'm dealing with some mental health issues. And that seems to be the thing. Like, corporate America is very sensitive now. Like, oh, okay, if you need a mental break, fine. And Falcons were very supportive of that, too. I mean, their leading wide receiver was, I need to take some time away. Now, whether they knew what he was taking time away for or whatever, nothing was ever said. He left. And in November, he made a series of parlay bets totaling about $1,500. And he did it through a sportsbook app, the Hard Rock Florida sportsbook. And they alerted the NFL once they could verify that it really was Calvin Ridley of the Atlanta Falcons. And the NFL looked into it and now have suspended him for the upcoming season. Well, this normally, in probably in another time, in another era, another decade, only a few years ago, take your pick on the timeline, this would have been an open shut case. Yeah, you know what? NFL player gambled on games. Didn't matter that he was away from the team. It's part of the CBA. Here's your suspension. We don't tolerate that. Boom. But boy, did this raise a lot of questions yesterday. This is one of those stories that is kind of small when you think about it. I mean, Calvin Ridley's a good wide receiver, but he's not the greatest wide receiver in the league, and he doesn't play for a Super Bowl contending team. But that being said, this is a simple case that now has raised a whole bunch of questions about gambling, its relationship with the NFL, the monetization of legalized gambling by the NFL, the active promotion of gambling by the NFL. It raises all of these kind of questions. The reality is this. Calvin Ridley should not have bet on any games because he knows the rule. Whether it looks weird that the league is in bed with gambling agencies, Calvin Ridley knows what the CBA said. He knows it is drilled into these players over and over again. You don't bet on games. That's it. That's it. And you could argue the ethical angle to that all you want, but the reality of it is he did break a rule. Now, so let's just clear that up right away. You can't rob a bank to show that it can be done. You can't hijack a plane to prove that the security has failed. You don't get to do that. You rob a bank to prove that the security system is outdated, you've robbed a bank. You're a bank robber. You hijack a plane to show that you could sneak on a jet and that the security is faulty within the airline, you're a hijacker. That's it. He broke the rules. But the reality of it is the questions are legit. This is now a new era that the league has to get involved in. They have to figure this out. What does it look like if you have players gambling on sports apps that they promote? How does the league deal with this? How, on the one hand, does the league tell you and me that maybe we should get a Caesars app or an MGM app or whatever it is? How does the league do that, but then say to his players, don't touch that or you're going to lose a lot of money? And how serious is this? Well, think about it. Think about some of the NFL players that have been accused of domestic violence, of actually hitting women, of Adrian Peterson when he was switching his sons behind, and the penalties for those. Five games, six games, three games, reduced to four games, whatever it may be. Look at the list of players that have come back from really serious, real serious allegations and things that were proven. Even drugs. And this is a year away from the game. Is the league making Calvin Ridley an example? Of course they are. But here's the question. Who did Calvin Ridley hurt by gambling on these games? Did he hurt the league? The league would like you to believe that. The league would say, Calvin Ridley, even if he was away from the team, even if he was on leave, he knows his team. He knows the Jacksonville. That was the team he bet on. He bet on games involving the Falcons playing Jacksonville. He is savvy enough and experienced enough to know the way the Atlanta Falcons would have prepared for that game against Jacksonville, even if he's not on the team. It is quite possible he communicated with friends who are still on the team. So the league would like you to believe that in the end, they're protecting the integrity of the game. They're protecting the integrity of the game by saying, look, away from the game or not, he still was part of the Atlanta Falcons team and therefore had some inside information. He's not directly in the locker room, but he certainly has access to what's going on in there. But isn't the reality that the NFL was protecting the gambling business? I've told you guys many times, when I was in Las Vegas growing, you know, growing in my career, I had a wake-up call into what the gambling industry really was like. Because I was led to believe my whole life that, you know, gambling and sports are just two businesses that can never coincide with each other. That if you actually had a relationship with gambling as a league, all the games would be rigged, that the casinos would rig the games. And when I went to Vegas, I didn't know the business. I was a kid from New Hampshire. And I went to Vegas and I met people who were in the business, and the exact opposite was true. Vegas doesn't care who wins games. They don't. They honestly don't. The sportsbook only cares if it's really tilted to one side. But what they do is that line is manipulated so that they get money equal on both sides, so that you pay Peter with the money you've taken from Paul, and then you get the vig in the middle. So if they can manipulate the line to get about equal money on both sides, that's a win for the casino. Now, where you see the stories when they go, the sportsbook took a hit, was because one side was heavily betted and they couldn't quite get the money on the other side that they wanted. You can't manipulate the line too much, otherwise you tilt the scale in the opposite direction. So what I did find out, though, was that they absolutely are on these kind of things, right? When they noticed that a certain school, kids wearing, college students wearing a certain school color are betting against their school, or too much money is on an average Big Ten basketball game on a Tuesday night that normally wouldn't be that way, they know the trends, and they alert the FBI to these kind of things. It's happened in the Arizona State case, if you want to look into that. Vegas is the gambling entities want to protect their business. They don't want inside information, because they know when inside information gets out, it can really, really mess with their bottom line. So this sportsbook app, this sportsbook company that Calvin Ridley bet with, alerted the NFL. The NFL didn't find this through some secondary investigation or some anonymous source. The sportsbook told the league, we've verified this. This is really Calvin Ridley of the Atlanta Falcons, and he's gambling on the Falcons. And so the NFL is going to want to paint the picture that the integrity of the game is what is at stake here, but it is also possible that the gambling business was worried about Calvin Ridley continuing to do this. Now, I've heard some arguments already online and, you know, through Twitter and even columns that say, wow, a year for this, when all of these other people, like I mentioned earlier, were given five or six games. It's a valid argument. A year is hefty. It's very hefty. And it doesn't fit the crime of $1,500. But that's not why Calvin Ridley is getting punished here. Calvin Ridley is getting punished here because the NFL doesn't have a line. The NFL doesn't have a, well, that's okay, but that's not okay. They don't know what would be fine in a new age of online gambling. They don't know what to do other than to say to their players, you can't do it. They can't suspend Calvin Ridley three games for $1,500, because what if a certain other player bets $2 million, right? So they have to make it general. And this is a wake-up call. Again, I've used that term twice, and it's the name of the show. This is a call for all the players in the league. This could happen to you. That contract you just signed, we'll take it away. Calvin Ridley's not going to get $11 million because he bet $1,500. You want to be that guy? You know, go ahead, be that guy. If you want to do it, do it. But one other point to make here is this. Back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 50s, you know, go back to all of the sort of gambling scandals that we've had in sports. Pete Rose is the highest on the level, but you can even go back to Shoeless Joe Jackson and the White Sox throwing the World Series. Who were the people that these people had to go to gamble, right? They had to go to bookies. They had to go to organized crime. There was, you know, Las Vegas and like Atlantic City was like the only places you could bet legally. So if you wanted to place a bet in Chicago, or if you played in Milwaukee, or you played in Atlanta, or you played in Dallas, or you played in, if you wanted to bet, you had to go to organized crime. It's the argument that I made on Pete Rose all the time when people say, why are we hating on Pete Rose? He bet on his teams to win. Well, he bet on his team to win, but here's the problem. He was betting with the wrong people. Because organized crime, they have no boundaries, and if the debt had gotten so large, they could have gotten Pete Rose to really go after the integrity of the game to pay off his gambling debts. So the league was, you know, it's the company you keep. Now it's not that at all. It you can do it on your phone. You can do it online. You can go into a sports book at some stadiums in the country. My God, the team plays in Las Vegas of all places. So this is more wide open. Why get involved with a bookie when you can place your bets online? All right. So there is a criminal element that has been erased with the legalization of gambling. So the league now has to figure out where this all fits. Are they hypocrites? Or are they really protecting the integrity of the game or protecting the industry of gambling? Because however you look at the Calvin Ridley situation, two things are clear. One, the NFL really, really wants to make an example of him to the players in the league and to you by saying these games weren't compromised. Right? Calvin Ridley did not compromise. Even though he wasn't playing and wasn't on the team, he did not compromise these games. These games are still on the up and up. But two, they also want you to know that in the end, Calvin Ridley didn't use any of his inside information to affect the line or the way the game was being perceived by bettors. And those are two very important things to the NFL now, when they only had to worry about one for years and years and years and years. They couldn't have cared less about what gambling and what the street was calling about their game. But they did care about the integrity of theirs. But now they've got two businesses to take care of. And I think they're trying to take care of it with one individual who lost $11 million, and that's Calvin Ridley. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. More on this coming up. We'll get to that. Plus the NCAA Tournament Selection Sunday coming up. Shelby Mast is going to join us in Hour 3. I love Shelby Mast. It's pretty rapid fire when you get him on. We'll go through the conferences. We'll go through the teams, the bubble teams, who's the number one seeds. He's got this all figured out. Bracketwag.com is his website. I can't wait to talk to him. In Hour 2, we're going to talk to D. Orlando Ledbetter, one of our good friends in Atlanta, on this Ridley situation as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we'll get more into the NFL, the Calvin Ridley situation. I just think it opens up a lot more questions than just suspending a guy for gambling. We'll get to that coming up. Again, congratulations to Chattanooga. They punched their chicken into the NCAA tournament, first time since 2016 for the Mocs, so it's not like it's been a huge drought. They win in overtime against Furman. That was extremely fun to watch. I caught the last few minutes of regulation and all of overtime in that one. They advanced to the tournament after they beat Furman on a wild three-pointer by David Jean-Baptiste. They win. We got a couple of semifinal games tonight in the West Coast Conference. It'll be Gonzaga and St. Mary's. Those are two teams that are ranked in the top 25. You got the semifinals in the Summit League, South Dakota State against, I think, North Dakota State. Yeah, they beat Oral Roberts. You got the Horizon League finals tonight. So these are all, again, teams that will be playing tonight for a shot at going to the NCAA tournament. But today is also the start of the ACC tournament in Brooklyn. You got the MAC tournament, the MAC championship game. Championship will be today. That's in Atlantic City. So you've got a couple of them that are getting underway, but a lot of finals tonight. You got the Northwest Conference tournament, Bryan against Wagner. So there's a couple of them where this gets kind of fun. So you get to see this sort of play out. Conference USA tournament in Frisco that gets started today. So a lot of basketball as we sort this out till Selection Sunday. That's why we'll have Shelby Mast on. And then later this week, we'll start previewing some of these conference tournaments. But again, the NFL, there's two sides of this Calvin Ridley story that I'm still trying to unpack here. Is it a big, big deal? It kind of is, but it's not a scandal, all right? It's not a scandal. He might not even be the only player to be gambling. I know there was a defensive back for Arizona, Josh Shaw, I think it was, that got caught gambling too. He's not he doesn't play anymore. Calvin Ridley is a star. And is he the only player gambling? Probably not. Probably other players aren't being as open about it. Maybe other players are using friends who have accounts with some of these online, you know, agencies and betting in that way. But the other thing, too, is it's, you know, I'm going to try to be sensitive on this because I know gambling can be an addiction. But it's not about money for a lot of people. Like, everyone always wonders, like, why do these guys have to gamble? They make so much money. It is. It's the rush. It's the adrenaline. It's not about making money. They're not betting, so they're not charting it out on an Excel sheet, going against wins and losses and profitability. They're not doing it like that. They're doing it for a buzz. If you gamble on games, you watch games completely different than when you watch it as a fan, right? Especially when you instead of betting money line, you're betting against the spread, because when you're betting against the spread, you pretty much hang on to the game the whole time, right? Like if your team has to win by 8, 9, whatever it is. So I doubt Calvin Ridley is the only adrenaline rush athlete in the NFL that is placing wagers either through friends or anonymous sites or whatever, and you know, just begging to get caught. But it does raise a larger question. What did the league think it was doing when it got involved with these gambling entities in the first place? Like, and listen, I'm fine with it. I'm glad that there's a criminal element that has been somewhat removed. It's not fully removed, but it has been somewhat removed from this. If you go to these sites and you gamble, you have to have the money. It's like going to a casino in Vegas, right? You know, unless you're a whale and you're getting credit. Most of us, when we go to play, if we go to Vegas on a trip, you know, we're not getting a line of credit. We have to bring money with us. You know, if you want to bet $20 on a game, you have to give them $20. With a bookie, you just tell them and then they come to collect when you lose. And that's how you can get really in trouble, where you're just asking if you can pile it on and pile it on and pile it on. And next thing you know, you're going to owe them something, especially if someone of prominence. But this is, you know, this again is a lot more open. It's a lot. There's more of a dialogue between these sites and the league to these sites. But one thing about this that I think is sort of troubling, and Ron and I were just talking about this during the break, a year is a hefty fine for this crime.
Yeah.
It's a hefty crime, a penalty, when, again, we were talking about this off the air. Remember when Roger Goodell came out, Ray Rice punched his girlfriend, now wife, in the face. We got it on camera. He beat the crap out of her. And they came out, the first thing they said was 2 games. And America lost its mind. And then Roger Goodell went, oh, did I say 2 games? I'm sorry, indefinitely. Right? Like, whoops.
But I still feel
initially thought that crime was worth 2 games.
Yeah, and I feel like domestic violence is still, I mean, it's frowned upon, obviously, in the NFL, but it's not as severe as betting.
Right. And again, there are two schools of thought with that. And I I'm on the side of, what are you doing suspending people who beat their wives 2 games and gambling a year? I'm like, it's enough with this. But the league looks at its, okay, so if you beat your wife,
yep,
right, or that, you're not only in trouble with the league, but you're mostly in trouble with the law of the land, right? That's your bigger thing. Like, you have to deal with the authorities and then your job, right? In gambling, you're only dealing with your job. No one is going to Calvin Ridley's house and arresting him for gambling on a 3-5-team parlay. He did it legally, right? But he broke the law of the league. And so here's the thing. The league is worried about, okay, if we let him go with, let's say, 2 games, are there guys that will be willing to sacrifice 2 games to be a part of the adrenaline of legalized gambling? Like, are we opening the door to people like, well, it could cost you 2 games, and guys go, screw it, I don't care, 2 games, fine, whatever. Here's my 18 parlay because I need the rush of gambling. We'll explore this more as the show continues. It's Tony D, Ron Culver at Sports Map Radio. Coming up next, the best team in basketball was at it again last night.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Big deal, little deal, no deal on the Calvin Ridley suspension for the league and its relationship with gambling. We'll get to your tweets coming up. The best team in the NBA added again last night, and this is just my thought. Philadelphia is fantastic. Remember that old line back in the day? Maybe I'm a little too old. Nevertheless, they beat the Chicago Bulls last night, 121-106. They are cruising right now. They have won six of their last seven. And the only loss that they had over the weekend, they played Miami. They let James Harden sit out that one for a little bit of rest on that hamstring. And they're cruising. Joel Embiid had 43 points, 14 rebounds. James Harden had 14 assists last night. This is becoming a unstoppable duo when they're on the court. This is a Philadelphia team that will be making up a lot of ground from their initial season when they were dealing with just Joel Embiid and really nothing else. Tyrese Maxey had a great game last night. Etan Shander was on our show last week from Philly. He told us that's the guy that has benefited the most outside of Embiid on the Sixers from the James Harden acquisition. And this has been massively impressive when you think about what Daryl Morey has been able to do. You watch this team play, and Chicago, they cruised past Chicago last night. You watch this team play, and it is mind-boggling when you think Daryl Morey took Ben Simmons, who did not play for them and would not play for them, and essentially got James Harden out of the deal. It is really incredible. Congratulations to Philadelphia on this. They are the best team in the Eastern Conference. I think if they get in a seven-game series against Miami, and you know the line I always say about Miami, Eric Spoelstra has always had a team that will make you work to beat them. But I think they can beat them in a seven-game series, and I don't think anybody else is going to be a challenge for them. Not Milwaukee, and certainly not the Brooklyn Nets, who everybody still believes, oh, when they get it together, don't you worry, they'll be making their run in the postseason, because they ain't showing anything right now. They've lost 17 of 20 games, although most of that was when Kevin Durant was not on the court. He's now back on the court, but they still aren't winning basketball games, right? So I don't care what Vegas thinks about Brooklyn's chancing on winning the Eastern Conference. The best team in the Eastern Conference right now is Philadelphia, and you could make an argument that they're the best team in the NBA, that even Phoenix or Golden State or Memphis would have be hard-pressed to try to beat this team four times in seven games. What they are able to do in that combination of Harden and Embiid and the different ways Embiid gets to the basket because of James Harden is eye-popping. Now, the big question for me is going to be in the postseason, as I've said many, many times and a lot of people say when it comes to the playoffs, is there going to be good coaches with good teams making good adjustments to nullify that in some capacity? It is hard to do when you are dealing with playing the Sixers and then maybe the next night you're going on the road, whatever it may be, to get them one shot one time. When you're in a seven-game series over some two-week window like you may have in the first or second round, there's plenty of time and plenty of time in between to go over the tape time and time again. And Doc Rivers is going to have to flip it on his side to make sure that he makes the right adjustments to keep that lineup fresh against any counter move that could be made by a Bulls team or a Milwaukee team or a Boston team. But this Philadelphia team is a blast to watch. Now, on the flip side, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Ron, we know LeBron James can have at times that extra playoff mode. We've seen it time and time again.
Saw it a couple nights ago, right?
We had 56 points.
With Matthew Stafford in attendance.
That's right. Good point. Matthew Stafford in attendance.
Because all that video, that viral video kept going around. I was like, I had to put on a show for you.
Right. Sure. You're the Super Bowl champs. Right now, the Lakers are ninth in the Western Conference. They would be in that sort of play-in game mode,
yes,
right? But last night they played San Antonio, and LeBron sat out. And, okay, I understand he's dealing with a knee issue, right? But the Lakers don't have a lot of wiggle room on games in which he can't play. They better be really, really careful, because Portland is just three games behind getting into this four-team play-in thing. And San Antonio, they're not that far behind either. And if the Lakers aren't careful, I think the Lakers have to play every game with a sense of urgency. They're in a very precarious situation. Now,
I agree to a point. I do think they need to play with a sense of urgency, but, you know, do you think LeBron is sitting back going, okay, if we make the playoffs, how far are we going to go?
No.
Or you think he's just in full competitor mode and, like, you know.
All the time.
I
think there is a realism that we have that just. Defeatism that we have that they don't have.
Because I'm all on board with the defeatism now.
I understand. But.
I don't even think they win the play-in game, to be honest with you.
But let me ask you a question. If you are a basketball player, right, and you have made it to the top level of the NBA.
Oh, yeah. No,
do you ever just go, screw it? Like, why would you go screw it? Like,
well, why would he sit out?
But I know, that's my question, right? But why would you say, like he can admit the team stinks, but he's going to try because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Like, you and I might do it because we analyze. They don't analyze. Like, they don't look at the – they go – like, when we say one game at a time, what a cliche. They go, one game at a time is the only way I live. This is how I make my – this is how I work. I work one game at a time. That's what I do, right? It's like my son had a part-time job at Walmart during the COVID shutdown. And my wife and I were like, be careful, you know, like it was right during the heat of it.
Yeah,
anything. He would get these wacky schedules. He liked working there. He had buddies from his school that worked there, so they all worked together. But he would look at his schedule and go, how am I going to make it? And I'd be like, one shift at a time. And he'd be like, okay, and that's how he did it. But when he would look at the larger picture, he'd go, geez, I'm not going to get through this. And I'm like, one day you will. An NBA team is very similar. They look at their playoffs and they go, we're down 3-1. Well, the best thing we can do is just win tomorrow. Well, let's see what happens. And if we don't, we don't. And if we do, we do. So I think LeBron thinks, let's just get in and, you know, who knows? With Anthony Davis back, who knows? But they better be careful. They may not get into the play-in game if he keeps sitting out. San Antonio had no trouble. They had all 5 starters in double figures last night. And without LeBron, it wasn't really much of a battle.
I just feel like this team is going nowhere because, I mean,
even if they get Anthony Davis back...
I mean,
oh, yeah, they're not going that far.
What are you going to get, a game out of him? And then he's injured again.
Yeah, they're not going far.
I mean, I know we haven't used it in a while, but Jared Dubin put it so eloquently, a predictable disaster, and that's right. What the season has been.
Well, what I'm getting, it's not mad. I'm not mad. That's the wrong word. But confused is probably more like it, like sort of bitterly confused. How is it that we all said Russell Westbrook wouldn't work, and they thought it would?
Yeah.
Like every, and I'm not talking about guys like us who, I'm talking about deep NBA reporters, guys who really, really know, and they follow this all the time, and they're breaking down analytics, and they're on 82games.com, and they know all the inner stats and all of the things that are just mind-boggling in terms of numbers and, you know, points per possession and things like that. They all said, none of this makes sense why they want Russell Westbrook. This is not what his game was not the thing that was missing last season, right? When they lost to Phoenix in the first round, I think they beat Golden State in the play-in round, and then they lost, I think, Phoenix in the first round. What was missing was they needed shooters, and he's not a shooter, right? And yet the Lakers went, no, you're all wrong. We're going to get Russell Westbrook, it's going to work, and it never did. Never did.
I mean, his decline was fast too.
Fast, you're right. Quick.
It seems like it was just like, you know, a couple of years ago that he averaged a triple double for the season.
Oh, he was an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
Well, he was Oklahoma City. He was.
Well, he won an MVP.
He won an MVP. He might have won the MVP of the year I'm thinking of when he was in Oklahoma City,
yep,
pouring in triple doubles every night. Right. I mean, and then
I mean, this team that's assembled right now, I on paper or maybe in a video game mode, it's incredible.
Right.
And that's the problem. Because, I mean, you know, it's taking those players and making a video game out of it.
And I think it's impressive to see Phoenix, Memphis, Utah, Dallas is now playing probably some of the best basketball in the West.
Denver.
Right now. Denver. Like, these teams have, like, you know what? We had to wade through the LeBron Golden State time, right? Where it was LeBron in Cleveland against Golden State, and then it was LeBron in the bubble. It's always LeBron, and they waded through all that. And then, and now they've got it. They've got their time. They've got their time to move up and be a part of this Western Conference. And it's fascinating because even though LeBron got the title in Los Angeles, feels a little weird because it was in a bubble. I don't think there's an asterisk to it. They won a title. But the reality was, this is what people were saying when LeBron went to the Lakers. Like, we get why you want to go to the Lakers, but never forget it's the Western Conference.
I know, real quick, because, you know, when Tampa was winning, we dubbed them, you know, Title Town.
Right.
You know, Boston during the aughts in the early tens, early teens. I don't know what you call
right.
that. You know, we were calling them Title Town. L.A.
L.A.'s rolling now.
I mean, they have... You know, all three of their major teams have won titles in
That's
the last,
right.
what, 2 to 3 years?
Yeah.
But we don't give the Lakers and Dodgers credit because they did it in a shortened season.
They did it in a wild, weird, COVID-like way.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you, though, that over time, I think it becomes part of just
yeah.
the lore. I personally, and I've said this, I personally think the Lakers title in the bubble was more impressive than they have done, if they had done it.
I agree,
they were playing every other night. I mean, they were playing all the time. That I cannot, for those of you who know the NBA, you know what I'm saying, that those first round games, that they feel like they last a month in the opening round because television wants to give everybody time. So it is not uncommon for you to play game one on a Sunday and then don't play game two till Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just the way it's spaced out. And this wasn't that. They were playing like, they were playing in an NCAA regional atmosphere all the time. They were playing game and then another game. And it would just be a list of four games that would be going on in one day. And then they would take a break and then they would come back and do it again. And they were doing it all the time. There was no chance to rest, go home, chill out, relax. You were still in this bubble. I think it was harder to do. I know there are people made the argument, oh, no, it's when you have home court and all, but I just think that was a very daunting thing for teams to do, to be in Disney World and play constantly like they did. So I think the Lakers are more impressive title than if they had won it regularly. But you're right. The Dodgers, the Lakers, and now the Rams, all with titles.
Yeah.
Good for them.
And out of those three, the unlikeliest one won at home.
Right. Very true. Right, exactly.
Or actually even had home games.
Exactly.
Take it that far.
Maybe LeBron was right. Maybe they should have gotten a three-part team. Maybe more people would have showed up.
Well, those two teams can't have parades anymore, right?
Right,
we're,
no.
We're past that point of them having a parade.
They blew it. COVID,
but no,
COVID destroyed
that. I mean,
that.
This Lakers team is garbage.
It's
it really
trash.
Is. I mean, I've always liked LeBron. I've never been a LeBron hater. The only time,
I haven't either, yeah.
The only time I've ever hated him was for the decision. And
yeah.
then the stage show aftermath. When he was like, not one, not two, you know, I thought, I was like, okay, that's a little weird. But on the court, basketball, and even, you know, since then, you know, where he's kind of been humbled, he's one of the greatest players of all time.
Oh, absolutely, without question.
And,
yeah,
and yeah, I think it is a legitimate argument when you compare him to Jordan. I think there is a legitimate argument that can be had.
My issues with LeBron are all off the field, all off the court.
Yeah.
I have no problems with the talent. Like
it's literally
China
just
stuff.
A decision.
Daryl Morey, when he told Daryl Morey needed to get educated on Hong Kong, like that was
yeah.
like, well, that was a little weird because it doesn't seem like you're educated on Hong Kong, right? Like LeBron off the court, I have plenty of problems with him. But that doesn't. I try to separate. I've seen a lot of sports talking heads, like because LeBron will do something political, they're like, oh, and now he's lost three in a row and he's not even a good basketball player. Like Jordan wouldn't have. That's taking your political view of him and then and transferring that into your
yeah.
analysis of basketball. I try not to do that. I may disagree with him so much on things he say off the court, but on the court, he's one of the best athletes of my lifetime.
And real sports. Quick, when it comes to Jordan, it's like we completely ignore the Washington Wizard years.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Like that doesn't even exist when we talk about Jordan anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you know, LeBron wins titles at every place he's landed. He had to go back to Cleveland to get it for them, but everywhere he's played, he's won a title. So I give him that. All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up in hour number two, we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb, of course, and then D. Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution will join us. We'll talk more about the Calvin Ridley situation. A little few more things to sort of unpack there. Once again, $1,500 was bet. He's going to lose $11 million. I don't mean to chuckle, but that's, you know, when you think about it. Like, everybody's pointing out, like, who bets $1,500 to lose $11 million? But that's it. And he knew the rules going in, and he still did it anyway. But like I said, I've been saying all morning, I think the Calvin Ridley story opens up a whole bunch of other questions rather than sort of the open-shut case of a player gambling when he wasn't supposed to. But, oh, and you know what I forgot to mention, which we'll explore a little bit? What about Stephen Ross? What are they going to do to that guy if they indeed find out that he was going to give Brian Flores $100,000 to purposely lose games?
We're going to suspend him a quarter.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Are they going to try to push that under the rug? Or are they going to really kick him out of the ownership group?
Maybe they're hoping the Calvin Ridley situation outplays that? Like, we just kind of forget that's
God,
going on?
I hope not. That's a worse crime than Calvin Ridley betting $1,500 on some parlays on his team through a legal sportsbook app. Like, Stephen Ross was actually trying to make it so that people bought tickets would see the team lose on purpose. God, I hope they take that team away if indeed they find out he actually did do that. All right, coming up, it's hour number two as we roll along this morning at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Want to hit us up on Twitter? We'd love to hear from you on Wake Up Call.